For a few days in April in 1970, our guest and his crewmates, I think, really held the attention of the whole world as they miraculously brought the ill-fated Apollo 13 safely back home. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, and really pleased to welcome Captain James Lovell to the show today. He's, of course, a former NASA astronaut, retired captain in the Navy. And he will also be speaking to the UW-Madison graduates this weekend and will be receiving an honorary degree as well. You may have some memories of the beginnings of the space program. What are your memories? What questions do you have for Captain Lovell? I hope you'll join in today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Or post a comment on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Captain James Lovell, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, Larry, I'm standing by to talk to your people, and I'm looking forward to being the commencement speaker.
Well, I tell you what, we're looking forward to it as well. I don't think everybody realized that you were a high school student in Milwaukee. You attended UW-Madison before going to the Naval Academy. What was UW like when you were here?
It was a lot smaller. I think there were about 18,000 students in the university there at Madison. And all the buildings were basically, I think, on the west side of university. I'm not too sure. Some were on the other side. But it was a very pleasant experience to go there.
What was your career objective at that time?
Well, I had gotten an appointment into an NROTC group for naval aviators. And so my first 2 years would be there. Then I was going to go into flight training and then go out to sea with the Navy. And if everything was successful, they'd send me back to Madison for my last 2 years of college. But then I was disrupted when after my 2 years at Madison, I started my flight training and I got an appointment to the Naval Academy. And my mother said, "Get your education while you can," because this is the best deal you can have, and so that's what I did.
I tell you what, you were selected by NASA to become an astronaut in 1962, and what was the program like at that time?
Well, it just started. As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting. I was in an initial group of astronauts in 1958. There was 32 of us who had, were selected out of about 140, I guess, and we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico, for our physicals. And I was the one of them with John Glenn. And so John and I went through the initial physicals for the space program, for that Mercury program, way back in 58 and 59. Of course, John made it, and I did not. And I didn't get in until the second selection.
Yeah, well, you worked with John, and sorry for his passing. What are some of your favorite memories of John Glenn?
Well, he was pretty much of a straight shooter. He was a real Boy Scout, but really, competitive, very competitive. He really wanted, I think, to fly that very first flight that Al Shepard flew, but fortunately, I think he was much more successful flying the first orbital flight.
Yeah, I would I think agree with you on that. Do you think the space program here in the U.S. would have progressed as quickly as it did if the Soviets hadn't been involved in their own space program?
No, I think that the fact that we were competing with the Soviets in technology and prestige and things of this nature inspired our program to continue going and to be successful.
Let's talk about the Gemini program. We have lots of callers online. We'll go to the phones in just a second. But what were the objectives of that Gemini program?
Well, the Gemini program was to prove out certain factors that we needed to have before we go to the moon. For instance, a long-duration flight like I did in Gemini 7, and then Gemini 12 was the extravehicular activity in case we needed that going to the moon. Rendezvous was very, very important. Rendezvous and docking, essential for the lunar flights and So all these flights of Gemini were the precursors to actually getting ready for Apollo.
Yeah. And how'd you train for that rendezvous? That was pretty cool.
Well, actually, the initial rendezvous was going to be done by Gemini 6 with a unmanned target vehicle where they could not only rendezvous but dock. But the target vehicle was lost on launch, and so Gemini 7 was next to fly the two-week mission. So they held off Gemini 6. Gemini 7 flew, and about 10 days after we were in orbit, they launched Gemini 6, and we did the rendezvous. No docking, but we did the rendezvous.
That was really cool. Mona in Madison has something for us here. Mona, thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi, thanks. I wanted to tell Jim that I had seen him, I call him Jim, in 65, I believe, spring of 65, when he and Buzz Aldrin and Casey came out to Kilo to train for the moon mission. And I was kind of disappointed at the time because I thought that John Glenn was coming. I had never heard of these other three guys. But I got wonderful autographs from you three. I appreciate it, and I've been following your careers. So thank you for coming to Madison.
You get that sort of thing very often, Jim?
Well, several times.
Oh, that was very nice. Thanks, Mona. Ann and Waldo, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you, James and Larry?
Well, we're doing great. What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to just let James know my father worked with NASA from the very beginning, shooting off satellites from Wallops Island on Newport News. From there, we went to Cape Canaveral and then up to got a Space Flight Center in Greenbelt. But my comment is that I'm a teacher, and students don't realize how much spinoff there was from the space program as far as technology and that kind of stuff. And I just think it's amazing. And I just wanted to be able to talk to you, James, because my father had a lot of respect for you. He was a public relations officer for 32 years.
Oh, what was your father's name?
Kenneth Stenstead.
Oh, that's wonderful. James, comment?
Well, I appreciate her father's work, obviously. I meet a lot of people now who are the children of the people that worked in the space program.
Sure.
And so it's very nice to hear about the stories that they told about their participation. As a matter of fact, I meet a lot of people, men and women in their late 50s and 60s, who said, oh, I was about 10 years old when I saw you fly.
Yeah.
So, gives you an idea how old I am.
Yeah.
My father was a graduate of UW-Madison.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say hi to you. It's great to talk with you, and I wish you the best.
All right. Thanks, Ann. Thank you so much for calling. Oh, let's turn to Steve in Madison next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Kind of level, the question I would have is the Sea of Tranquility. How many Apollos landed on the Sea of Tranquility? There were quite a few. And did they all land in the Sea of Tranquility? And is there any thought about trying to go to other places on the moon, like perhaps one of the craters, like Tycho or Copernicus or any one of the other craters?
Sure.
Well, actually, I think only Apollo 11 really landed in the Sea of Tranquility. There were other places where the other spacecraft landed. For instance, Apollo 13 was going to land in the highlands around Frau Mauro, a crater in about the center of the moon. And the other flights landed in various other positions. The Sea of Tranquility was picked because it was a flat area, which we found out on Apollo 8, we looked for the flat areas to give the people who would make the first landing the greatest chance of survival. And we found approaching the Sea of Tranquility, just to the shoreline, a little triangular mountain that was used as an initial point, the point where they'd start their descent into the Sea of Tranquility. And I named that mountain on Apollo 1968, Mount Maryland, after my wife, and it was used for Apollo 10 and Apollo 11 to make the actual landing. So it's still there if you want to take a look at it.
Yeah, I look at the moon with my binoculars. So just 750 binoculars gives you a really good picture of what's going on. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I should mention that Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, is going to be on after you're off, Jim, and talk with us about astronomy and the skies as well. So that's going to be fun, a fun follow-up to your visit with us today. It had to be almost surreal. It must have felt as surreal to you as it did to the rest of the country to have that first manned mission to the moon.
Well, the Apollo 8 flight, I was really the navigator of that flight. It was probably the high point in my career because I got to see the backside of the far side of the Earth, of the moon for the first time. But in reality, we went to explore the moon, of course, and we really discovered the Earth for the millions of people who saw our photograph of Earthrise that Bill Anders took. It tells you just one picture, just about all about us. Because I'm going to mention in my talk at the commencement that my thumb could hide the Earth completely, and you have to really think about that. That and my thumb is an Earth that has about 6 billion astronauts on it, all striving for the same thing.
Oh man!
Yeah, really, our position in the universe.
Neil and Cameron next. Neil, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen, and Mr. Lovell. Thanks for being on. It's a real honor and pleasure to have you on this morning. I have a comment and a question. My comment is, and maybe he's listening and he'll roll his eyes, but I have a friend down the road here, a few miles. His name is Jim Adams, and he was a astrophysicist, and he did the reentry program for Mercury and then worked on Apollo also before he left and went to work for the Department of Defense. And I was just curious if that name happened to ring a bell. And he actually there's a reentry module that sat in Houston, but it's now in the Air Museum down in Topeka, Kansas, with actually his work displayed down there. So that was kind of cool. He's a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what was his name again? I'm sorry.
Jim Adams.
Jim Adams, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of very good people who worked on the trajectories, and especially reentries. The reentry coming back from the moon, Apollo, was very, very critical. We had to go inside a 2-degree pie-shaped wedge to make a safe landing through the atmosphere and then landing on the Earth. If we had been too low, we would have skipped off, like skipping a stone on water, and if we
yep.
steep, we'd have burned up.
Yep. Yeah, and he was very humble about it, because I asked him about that, and he says, well, once you do it a couple times, it's really not that hard. of course, he wasn't up there coming back. He was sitting on the ground, so it's a little easier. The question I have is, I'm a professional pilot, and, I get people are like, oh, aren't you afraid when you fly? And, of course, after a while, it doesn't take too long to figure out that flying is so much safer than driving. And once I was in the jet, I was very, very comfortable. However, you were in uncharted territory. How did you get around the mental aspect of preparing for that launch, really knowing that this, could go wrong? And in fact, you just said that the other vehicle that you were going to rendezvous with didn't make it. how did you get around that mentally? How did you prepare for that?
Well, you got to realize that my career had been one of being a test pilot, and so test pilots by nature always look for something that might go wrong. But we always have lived on the edge, so to speak, and so it's just an extension of what I did testing airplanes.
Yeah, there,
sure.
It's the training. Neil, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. having fun today visiting with Captain James Lovell about his work as an astronaut, Apollo, lots of Apollo missions, and of course he is the commencement speaker on Sunday, December 18th, at the Kohl Center in Madison for the UW-Madison commencement. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. As I mentioned, coming up at 11:45, we keep looking at space, this time from the ground with our guest Jim Lattice of the UW-Madison Space Place. So stay with us for that. Right now, visiting with Captain James Lovell. And Jim, you know, the movie Apollo 13, which was kind of based on your book, the book that you wrote, you know, we all knew exactly what was going to happen, but still, for just the average person listening, it was tense. did you enjoy the movie?
Yes, the movie is quite accurate, and it's really a testimony to Ron Howard, the director, that he was able to keep interest and people at the edge of their seats, even though when you walked into the movie theater, you knew the end.
it was something else. It must have been cool to have Tom Hanks playing you.
Yeah, Tom was a very good guy to play me, and he did a good job. In fact, the whole cast was quite dedicated to making this a good movie, and it turned out to be that way, too.
Yeah, it was a wonderful film. Kathy in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I taught at Juneau High School, and I know Captain Lovell attended there, and we always thought of him, and many kids were inspired by your great achievements. What was your favorite memory growing up in Milwaukee or attending Juneau High School?
Well, of course, attending Juneau was really a high point because it was a very small school. I think I was really in the Milwaukee West High School district. I'm not too sure. But that's where I met my wife. She was a freshman, and by that time I was a junior, and I was serving food at the cafeteria, and she came around. I didn't have any junior girls to invite to the prom. They were all taken, and so I invited her, and that was 65 years ago.
Oh, man. That's a pretty good story, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much for that. Tony in Egg Harbor, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Captain. About 13 years ago, I had the great fortune of meeting Captain Lovell, but not under great circumstances. I was his water heater repairman at his restaurant in Lake Forest. And when my technician called to say the water heater was non-repairable and he didn't want to face the captain with that bad news, I was summoned out to the restaurant. And with my heart beating, I had to explain to him that it was 1 month out of warranty. And once we got through all the anxieties of the broken water heater, the captain went on to tell me, down in the boiler room, while he's hanging on to one pipe, I'm hanging on to the other, the blow-by-blow story of how the launch sensor was not installed on the oxygen cylinder, but the launch pad sensor was. And if you can get into that story a little bit, I've told that story 100 times, and I want to make sure I got it right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you'd be kind of interested to know that the restaurant is no longer the property of me. We sold it about a year and a half ago, and including that bad water heater.
Well, do you remember that story that Tony was talking about?
Hello, that was some time ago.
That's a hard one to remember, Tony. So many things have happened over time. So we'll turn to Ed in Madison, see what's on his mind. Ed, thank you for calling.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you, Captain Lovell. When I was a student at the University of Wisconsin, late 60s, I joined a service fraternity, Alpha Phi Omega. We claimed that I was told that you were a member of that fraternity, and particularly our chapter. And Well, you were flying around the moon. We were in our national convention in Washington, D.C., and everybody thought the world of us. But I'd like to find out for sure. I've never been able to prove that. And did you indeed join the service fraternity Alpha Phi Omega?
Yes. When I was at the university, I was a member of Alpha Phi Omega, which is the Boy Scout fraternity. And I was there for the 2 years. As a matter of fact, I went back. Of course, I went to the university in 1946 to 48.
Mm-hmm.
I did go back to the university in the 60s. I remember that Warren Knowles was the governor at that time. And the University of Wisconsin was kind of in a little bit of a turmoil with a lot of activists. I was to give a talk to the students in the field house, and they were wondering whether it would be disrupted by a lot of turmoil, but fortunately I got through it with no problem.
There we go. So he was, Ed, you've got the right from the astronaut's mouth.
Well, that's good to know.
All right, thank you so much. Joel in Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Joel.
Hi, good morning. Jim, I've been a big fan of you and all the astronauts and NASA team for years. In fact, it took me a while to get into space, and when you were launching on your Apollo 13 mission, I was less than a month old. But when I started learning about that mission in particular, I was disdained to know that it seemed like the American people weren't interested in that. Space had become a routine thing, and they didn't even broadcast your transmission. And it seems to me like that carries on today, even though, thank goodness for the internet, we're not dependent on a few channels to broadcast the NASA launches and missions, so we can watch it on the internet now. But what do you think? There is a difference? Is there still a lack of interest in the space program today as it was beginning to with that mission?
Well, I think the lack of interest has been somewhat of the slowdown of our progress in the space program. And, we don't have a vehicle to go to the International Space Station. We have to hitch a ride on the Russian Soyuz. There's been a lot of controversy of... just how should we go? We went sort of commercial-wise, except for the fact that's getting to be very expensive. And so I hope that with the new administration coming in, that we have a clear-cut idea of just what we're going to be doing in the future. I think that we should really concentrate now on really going back to the moon, learning more about the moon, getting very comfortable with the architecture or the infrastructure that we have to develop to go to the moon, and then use that and expand it to then start going towards Mars. But this is going to take some time. It's, a lot of people say that, in just 3 years we'll try a Mars trip. Well, that's impossible. It will be decades before we really put someone in the vicinity of Mars, in my opinion.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much, Joel. John in Milwaukee, we'll go on to you now. Thank you for calling, John.
Thank you very much. It's quite an honor to speak to you. The question I actually have is kind of an odd one. I'm wondering, you've been interviewed probably a million times, been asked a million times about Apollo 13. What would be something that maybe somebody's never asked or that you haven't, like, told somebody, like, what's your favorite beer or your favorite food or, like, your best holiday or, something like that?
Something that nobody else may know about you, in other words.
Right.
Well, I think, I really don't know. I have been asked questions other than the space program. But I do find out that the younger the people are, the more intense the questions are. A 5 or 7 year old who has seen the movie and all that might want to ask me how many bolts did that hatch have on it, and someone who is about 50 or 60 will say, well, gee, what's it like being in space?
Which is asked all the time. Now, one question that's always been asked by people at all ages is, how do you go to the bathroom? And, you know, that's one question everybody seems to think about, zero gravity and how do you go to the bathroom. And we have a unique answer that is very, very cautiously.
Very cautiously.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Sue in Evansville, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Yes, hi. My uncle, Walter Herillo, worked for NASA many, many years ago. And he always told the story that with the first landing on the moon, they left a gold plate with all the names on of the people that worked on that. Do you have any knowledge of that or can confirm or deny?
No, that's the first time I heard of that. I don't know. I don't recall anything left on the moon of that nature.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sue. And Rich in Baldwin, it's your turn now. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I think back in the old days whenever they were shooting up all the rockets, you know, of course, the big thing where people were always talking about is that, oh, dude, millions and millions of dollars they're going to spend on these rockets and stuff. What a waste. Blah, blah, blah. And this went on every time you see this space program going on. And now, here we sit with this wonderful GPS that everybody's living on. We love it. It is incredible. I do also wonder why, did they know that stuff like GPS was going to be something that would probably be a result? And I wonder if they did, why wasn't more said about us that we might be a specific result of the space program?
All right. James, what do you think?
Well, if I got the question correctly, the program was the means of getting all these other uses of in our hands, like GPS. Of course, is looking at building the rockets and looking at making them to put in satellites so we can have a GPS system, looking at the electronics and the computer systems that now, you know, sort of spin out into the private sector. This was all some of the early research done by NASA that is now all over the private sector. Has nothing to do with actually going into space, but we use that technology all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? From the movie, one of the things I that just struck me in the movie was when there was some calculating to do and everybody pulled out their slide rules. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what a sea change from that time to now, and pretty much a result of the space program.
That's right, yeah. I can remember when my wife bought my first little calculator. I think she paid $110 for it, and all it did was add, subtract, multiply, and divide.
Oh, man, what a time. Thanks again, Rich, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Randy in Pewaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. Mr. Lovell, I collect astronaut autographs, and I have 9 of the 12 men that walked on the moon, and I need your autograph on a print. Where can I get you to autograph my print?
Well, the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation once a year has an autograph show, and that's where we usually talk to people and give autographs. Otherwise, you know, the signing autographs, if I go someplace and start signing autographs, then everybody will gather around, and the program will stop, and the sponsors will get mad because no one is sitting down. And so we have a general rule not to sign autographs. And I think that rule is going to hold Sunday when I'm going to give the commencement address.
Yeah, and so again, when do you do this? You do sign as part of what is it again?
The Astronaut Scholarship Foundation was actually made up, not made, I mean started by the original seven astronauts, Al Shepard and John Glenn especially. And it is a scholarship program to provide scholarships to college students in their last 2 years of college in the STEM programs, science and education and technology, to further their interest and provide the country with well-qualified engineering students. And it's been doing quite well, and we once a year go to have an autograph show, mainly to raise funds for that program.
Oh, that's wonderful. And when does that usually occur?
Usually around June or May or April, right around that area. We also honor certain astronauts who have made great contributions in their program.
And does it always occur at the same location?
Yeah, down at Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
All right. There you go. Check on, and I imagine if you go online, there's probably a website, I would guess, Jim, that would that a person could go to get all the details.
Yeah, just Google Astronaut Scholarship Foundation. I'm sure they will lead you into the proper areas.
There you go, Randy.
Okay, one other question is he going to be attending the Nova Space Convention in Arizona?
The what convention?
The Nova Space. They have a convention.
Oh, well, I was there this last time. And at that time, they said there weren't going to be any more, but I think there is another one. I don't know whether I'll be there or not, to tell you the truth.
Okay, there we go. And let's turn to Eric in Beloit, Wisconsin. Hi, Eric.
Good morning. I have, as a scientist and someone who teaches science now, I am particularly interested in hearing from your esteemed guest what you would tell people today to encourage them to go into the sciences. And in particular, a question that sometimes I get asked is, why do we still want to explore space? I mean, I have my own answers, but I really would like to hear it from the expert.
Well, I'm not an expert, but I think that, you know, you must have some liking to be an explorer, to enjoy science, to enjoy astronomy, to find out what's coming on in the future. There's so much still coming out about our universe, and we're learning more and more every day. Just recently, we finally discovered the gravitational wave, something that Einstein predicted way back in the teens, and we finally got them, many years later. But this is all, to me, very exciting to find out what's going on in the future. And so I think that if people are interested in that, they will naturally, study those type of subjects.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Eric. And Jerry in Waukesha, thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. Captain Lovell, I wanted to ask what might be a personal question, but how are you related to Lily Stapelfelt?
How am I related to Lily who?
Lily Stapelfelt.
Stapelfelt.
She sponsored my parents to come to my father and his family to come to this country from Germany in 1955.
Well, on my wife's side, and her maiden name was Gerlach, is also from Germany. And her father was an American here. There might be some relation there with the Gerlach family, but I don't know.
Yeah, Ralphie Gerlach was several years older than me, but I remember him coming to my house as a young boy.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Tom in Mequonago has something for us. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
And we appreciate your great programming, too.
Thank you.
Just had a comment to add with regard to the matter of the names being inscribed on the lander.
Yes.
They are, in fact, there, but they're not on a gold plate. They're inscribed on the interior of the lander structure.
That was left on the moon.
Yes.
Ah.
Now, we have a good friend in Florida who's, she is in her early 90s now, but she worked on the program, and her name is among those there, and that's the source of my information.
Oh.
So it wasn't on a plate,
but it was on the inside of the lander.
Yes, their names are engraved on the lander itself, but on the interior.
There we go.
That's something I didn't know.
There's a mystery. Oh, good. I'm glad you learned something today, Jim. Appreciate it. Sharon in Manitowish Waters, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Captain Lovell, in the mid-60s, my father worked for Governor Knowles, and I happened to be in the office when you and Deke Slayton came in and got the Wisconsin state flag to take up on the, was it the Apollo 13 flight? And then later, for the 68 presidential inauguration, I was asked by Governor Knowles to go meet you at the front door to usher you up to the reception for Wisconsin. And I was told that you were now a major and to make sure I addressed you correctly and everything. But anyway, it was a highlight of my life.
Oh.
And I have a picture with you in the governor's office.
Oh.
And, yes.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that call. Many memories. Jim, so many memories.
Yeah, brings back memories when Warren Knowles was there. I got to know him quite well. And I think that particular that time that she's mentioning was during the primary elections or what we had at Wisconsin at that time.
Ah, very good. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We have other callers online. I tell you, what do you think NASA did for our country, just thinking back to all of this?
Well, I think that NASA throughout the years has done several things. They've incited or increased the prestige of our technology, and also NASA has provided new technology to the people in many areas not related to space, but the use of that technology, such as computers and everything else, provided a new venue of exploration that we've had not had previously, and it's a program that is sort of a win-win. I mean, we have lots of cooperation now between various countries working on programs together, like the International Space Station. You know, can you think about 30 years ago when we were really contesting against the Soviets, and now we're partners and we're living together inside that vehicle?
You know, it's an amazing thing. And Captain James Lovell, I want to thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll certainly be looking forward to hearing your commencement address on Sunday at the Kohl Center at the UW-Madison campus. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, it's nice to be there. Take care.
Yeah. Captain James Lovell, our guest. Wasn't it fun to talk with him? Quite an honor for me to be able to interview him. Former NASA astronaut, retired captain in the U.S. Navy. Probably most famous as the commander of the Apollo 13 mission. Well, I tell you what, we're going to keep our eyes on space coming up here, because Jim Lattice, director of the UW Space Place and a faculty associate in astronomy at UW-Madison, up next to talk about what we can see in the night sky and all things space. You stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.